Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
With less than 2 weeks left in the session, the critical budget allocation process may be finally underway in the Florida legislature.
I think that what's completely irresponsible and unacceptable is to not pass a budget and to continue to think, well, we always could come back for special session.
Also tonight, besides having different budget versions, the Florida House and Senate also have differences when it comes to workers' compensation reform.
Anything that doesn't allow an injured worker to secure the legal services of an attorney who specializes, who does this type of work, is going to prevent the entire system from functioning the way it's supposed to.
We'll also get updates on state pension reform, a bunch of proposed tax breaks, at least in the House, and the growing opioid crisis impacting Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the second day of the eighth week of this Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. It appears talks regarding Florida's budget have restarted, with the House budget chief saying talks could begin as early as tonight. Lynn Hatter reports earlier in the day, the House's budget committee voted to reauthorize the current year's spending plan with a few changes after lawmakers appeared to be at a standstill.
The burns just keep on coming.
Or it'd be a sad commentary on the legal profession if two lawyers couldn't get their work done on time.
Last week, Senate President Joe Negron pretty much foreshadowed the breakdown with House Speaker Richard Corcoran. Both men are lawyers, and as of the writing of this story, they've not reached agreement on how to fund the state for the upcoming fiscal year. Tuesday, the House Appropriations Committee unveiled what it calls a continuation or standard operating budget, with the unfortunate acronym of SOB. Committee Chairman Carlos Trujillo calls it a backup plan.
I think it's a responsible thing to do. If we've reached an impasse, and it's really a standard operating budget, it's what we voted on last year. It's the same thing minus some member projects. I think that what's completely irresponsible and unacceptable is to not pass a budget and to continue to think, well, we always could come back for special session. That should never be the standard. That should be the exception, and it seems like it's becoming more of the standard than it is the exception.
The Angels Reach Foundation Autism Services is zeroed out. ARC of Tampa Autism Services is zeroed out. ARC of Indian River Autism Services is zeroed out.
House Minority Leader Janet Cruz reads off a list of groups that could be defunded if the SOB goes through. While the plan eliminates most member projects, it would also provide greater funding for healthcare, higher education, and Enterprise and Visit Florida than what the House is presently proposing. But Cruz argues the situation isn't fair to taxpayers, who she says have had their time wasted by lawmakers.
We all just need to grow up. We need to sit at a table together, and we need to do what the citizens of Florida and the friggin' taxpayers have asked us to come here to do, and that is to take the money that we collect from them and pass a balanced budget.
But Democrat Jared Moskowitz sees an opening for his party while simultaneously throwing shade at Republicans' inability to craft a budget.
If my party can just figure out how to take advantage of the dysfunction from Washington, D.C. that is now brought to Tallahassee, I think that we should be excited.
There are signs negotiations have restarted, with chamber leaders trying to strike deals on how to fund economic development agencies, the environment, and education. Trujillo says House and Senate leaders discussed the issues Monday evening. A joint budget has to be presented to lawmakers by May 2nd if the legislature is to adjourn on time, which looks increasingly unlikely. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
House and Senate Republicans have different ideas about how to address a dramatic spike in workers' compensation rates. But as Jim Ash reports, unions and trial attorneys are now saying the Senate version is the more worker-friendly.
Florida Workers Advocates President Mark Toobie says the House proposal, which includes a $150 an hour cap on attorney fees, won't work.
Anything that doesn't allow an injured worker to secure the legal services of an attorney who specializes, who does this type of work, is going to prevent the entire system from functioning the way it's supposed to.
FWA is made up of attorneys who represent injured workers, so it may not sound surprising that Toobie prefers the Senate plan, which has a $250 an hour cap. But Toobie says there's more to it. The House version would force the injured worker to pay his or her own attorney fees, while the Senate puts that burden on the insurance carriers.
The carrier is the one responsible for paying the fee, the entire fee, so that the injured worker is made whole as a result of securing the benefits to which he or she was originally entitled anyway.
Injured workers shouldn't have to sue to get their benefits in the first place, Toobie argues. But Associated Industries of Florida chief lobbyist Brewster Beavis says making workers responsible for their own attorney fees is the only leverage employers have to keep down costs.
We believe that putting more money into the pockets of the claimants, these injured workers, and letting them pay their attorneys is the best way to drive down those costs, this cost increase that we're seeing.
But Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley says the Florida Supreme Court has left lawmakers with little choice.
To change the system in a manner that makes it even less likely for the worker to have access to competent counsel and puts the worker in an even worse financial position than they were in pre-Castellanos, that to me doesn't comport with the decision.
Higher workers' comp rates are going to lead to layoffs, Beavis and other employer groups argue. But unions don't take the threat seriously. AFL-CIO lobbyist Rich Templin says lawmakers were pressured into slashing $345 million worth of worker benefits in 2003 by a manufactured rate crisis. Templin says at least the Senate version reforms the rate-making process so that doesn't happen again.
Quite frankly, the House package is merely rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, which at the end of the day helps none of our members and none of the workers that we represent across the state.
The House has already passed its version, and the Senate is poised to do the same. It's not clear whether the two sides can reconcile the differences before the session is set to end May 5th. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a controversial pension reform package is now starting to take form in the House.
We are one of the best, most funded pension systems in the country, if not the world. The only thing in this legislation that risks that is this default change.
The state's opioid crisis is spurring the legislature to crack down on a synthetic drug called fentanyl. But reform-minded lawmakers hope to piggyback their own priorities onto the bill. They see the measure as a chance to roll back mandatory minimum sentences.
I am not someone who believes that mandatory minimums, that heroin addicts are thinking about the mandatory minimums when they're using heroin.
Cannabis legislation is heading to House and Senate floors, and while House lawmakers put forward a restrictive vision, the Senate's attempting to reach out to minority communities.
It is a cruel irony that people of color have been excluded by virtue of violating, in many cases, the same laws which are now being reformed.
And the House is preparing for a vote on its tax plan, which would include tax breaks for moms and dads.
One of three low-income American families don't have the diapers they need for their kids.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
Amid budget negotiations, the House and Senate may be using the revival of a controversial pension reform package as a means to get on the same page. We get more on that story from Sasha Cordner.
For the past few years, many Republican House speakers, including current Speaker Richard Corcoran, have made making changes to the Florida retirement system a priority. In particular, it's making changes to the default retirement option if a new employee doesn't make a choice. The current default is the more popular retirement option known as the traditional pension plan. So House sponsor North Fort Myers Republican Matt Caldwell wants to change that to the 401k style investment plan.
And so all we're doing is changing the default, the choice we make for them when they decline to make a choice after given multiple opportunities. And they still retain the option to switch. If at some point in the future they realize You, the state, has defaulted me into the investment plan, but I really do want to be in the pension plan, they have the option to make that switch at any point.
Still, Rich Templin with the AFL-CIO says while that's true that a person can switch from the investment plan to the pension plan, there's a caveat.
They have the option to go back into the pension plan, but it will cost them thousands of dollars out of pocket. This is so important. There is no choice. When you're telling someone who's making $40,000 a year that they've got to come up with thousands of dollars out of pocket to buy back into the pension plan.
Many Democrats and union groups like Templin's have opposed the default provision, saying the investment plan is more risky and changing the default could destabilize the pension fund, which is seen as one of the best in the country as it's 84% funded. Still, the House last week passed a bill along party lines with Democrats opposed. The Senate, meanwhile, never had a measure that included that provision. That is, until this week. In the past, the Senate has never had the votes, but Clearwater Republican Jack Latvala, the Senate's budget chairman, indicated it could be part of the ongoing negotiations with the House.
That's part of what's under consideration now. We're working on that issue along with, they have their priorities, we have our priorities, and this is a time of year where we try to sink them.
So the bill had its first hearing in the Senate Governmental Oversight and Accountability Committee Monday. As the panel chair, Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley is the bill's sponsor. Along with the controversial default change, his bill includes a benefit for firefighters who contract certain types of cancers due to their job. And Baxley says with less than 2 weeks left in session, he just wants to get this over the finish line.
I mainly want to get this over to the appropriation so it can be a part of that discussion. This is a template. We may have some different tires and wheels on it before it gets out on the floor. But I really feel a responsibility from this committee to move this into the process.
And the measure narrowly passed Baxley's committee 4-3 with Democrats opposed. It nearly became a casualty of former Republican Senator Frank Artilla's resignation. Because he was no longer on the 7-member panel, the measure could have died on a tie vote. But Senate President Joe Negron appointed his majority leader, Wilson Simpson, to fill that slot, so the bill still had a chance. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
A bill aimed at criminalizing the deadly drug fentanyl is headed to the Senate floor. The measure comes as the legislature is struggling to respond to the state's opioid crisis. But the plan has lawmakers questioning whether they should combat addiction with punishment or treatment, as we hear from Kate Payne.
The scope of Florida's opioid crisis is hard to escape. Recovering addict Katherine Johnson is living it.
I was brought up in a middle-class family, and my parents are still married to this day. I was given everything I needed growing up, didn't want for anything, and in my addiction, ended up homeless, living on the street, and sleeping outside.
Many prescription drug users are turning to heroin for a cheaper and often deadlier high. To meet the demand, dealers are increasingly adding fentanyl and carfentanil to the mix, says Sarasota Republican Senator Greg Stube.
These drug dealers are splicing fentanyl and carfentanil with heroin. Apparently, it gives you, if it doesn't kill you, it gives you a bigger high.
Those synthetic drugs can be 50 to 100 times as powerful as heroin. And Stube says death rates are spiking.
In 2013, there was 185 deaths statewide due to fentanyl. And the following year in 2014, there were 397 deaths. And the following year, 2015, there were 705 deaths.
Stuby is sponsoring a sweeping bill he hopes will crack down on the state's opioid crisis. The measure would create new punishments for trafficking in 4 grams or more of the synthetic drugs. Sheriff Rick Wells of Manatee County says that's a significant amount.
4 grams of fentanyl is a lot. 2.2 milligrams is what's being sold out there on the street. That's what's killing people as we speak.
Under the bill, dealers could be charged with felony murder if the user dies, and the trafficking charges would carry mandatory minimum sentences beginning at 3 years. The thought of taking more oversight away from judges is spurring a lot of debate. St. Petersburg Democratic Senator Daryl Roussan says dealers deserve to be punished across the board.
And we're talking about trafficking and not mere possession. And those who seek to profit off the illnesses of other human beings, I just think need to be treated a little differently.
Roussan sees dealers as the villains and users as the victims. But some lawmakers think that line isn't so clean cut. Orange Park Republican Senator Rob Bradley wants judges to ask those questions and to analyze each case individually.
We empower judges in the fact-finding process to do that. So I think it's possible to be very serious about this scourge and to be tough on this scourge and also understand that every case has its own individual facts.
For years, some lawmakers have wanted to roll back mandatory minimums for drug crimes. They want judges to be able to give lighter sentences or emphasize medical treatment instead of jail time. St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis isn't convinced mandatory minimums lead to less abuse.
I think we hope it's the case, but I don't think that we have evidence that shows that that works. I am not someone who believes that mandatory minimums, that heroin addicts are thinking about the mandatory minimums when they're using heroin. I don't think they're thinking about that. I think they're thinking about the next high.
Brandis sees an opportunity to pass the reforms by piggybacking his plan onto Stuby's bill. He says he'll make his case again when the measure heads to the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Medical marijuana measures in the House and Senate are heading to the floor. Nick Evans reports lawmakers are making some last-minute adjustments ahead of negotiations.
Time is running out on the Florida legislative session. And although it seems clear House and Senate lawmakers want to pass cannabis legislation, it's not clear exactly what form it'll take.
The goal was to have a reconciliation between the Senate medical marijuana implementing bill and the House medical marijuana implementing bill, and to present that at this committee. Unfortunately, due to timing, we have not gotten there yet.
That's Estero Republican Representative Ray Rodriguez putting a diplomatic spin on the state of negotiations. He explains talks between the chambers have been productive, and in recent days, both sides have agreed to establish a research program within the Moffitt Cancer Center to help guide future policymakers. But the bottom line is the Senate and House bills remain far apart, and most of the new changes don't seem to be aimed at harmonizing the measures. Rodriguez says his bill requires face-to-face consultations.
So it has to be done in person. It can't be done over the telephone via a telemedicine situation. We also, in this PCS, prohibit physicians from certifying pregnant patients for the medical use of marijuana.
Those moves and others like prohibiting edibles and smoking and requiring a 90-day doctor-patient relationship cater to hardliners in the House. Rodriguez's bill also sets aside $10 million to fund a statewide campaign aimed at preventing illicit use. Democrats and public speakers fumed, but the measure is heading for the House floor. Meanwhile, the Senate has approved some last-minute changes of its own. Minority Leader Oscar Brannon wants state regulators to encourage diversity within the medical marijuana industry.
It's asking applicants to submit as part of their licensing a diversity plan, and then the Department of Health and will weight it accordingly.
The bill's sponsor, Fleming Island Republican Rob Bradley, gave his blessing. And one of Amendment 2's co-authors thinks it's a good idea, too.
It is indisputable fact that marijuana prohibition has had a disproportionately negative impact on minorities, particularly African Americans.
This is Ben Polera, head of Florida for CARE.
When legalizing something which was previously illegal, it has been the inclination of lawmakers to prohibit the participation of those with a criminal record from entering the industry. On one level, that inclination makes sense, but its result has been preventing minority small business people from pursuing opportunities in a nascent, growing industry with billions of dollars in annual revenue nationwide. It is a cruel irony that people of color have been excluded by virtue of violating, in many cases, the same laws which are now being reformed.
Like the House bill, Bradley's measure is now on its way to the floor. And although Tuesday's hearing included amendments incorporating some House ideas, Bradley and Rodriguez have a lot of work to do to bring their plans into agreement. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Panama City Representative Jay Trumbull has revamped his legislation on the state's trauma centers. It's not clear whether the House bill will make it through the Senate, but as Sarah Mueller reports, the Senate's legislation on trauma centers has already died.
Steve Asinia with the Hospital Corporation of America says the number of patients being treated at Orange Park Medical Center shows there's a need for two trauma centers in the area. Previously, UF Health Jacksonville was the only trauma center in the five-county area, which includes Clay and Duval counties.
It's not a small volume center, and it certainly underscores the fact that there's a desperate need for more than one trauma center to serve this big geographic area that spans from Baker County to the east, Nassau County to the north, all the way down to St. John's County.
The state requires each of the 19 trauma service areas to have at least one level one or level two trauma center. UF Health Jacksonville is a level one trauma center and cares for the most severely injured patients. It opposed the creation of Orange Park, which opened in Clay County with a temporary level two status less than a year ago. UF Health was one of several hospitals who filed a lawsuit against the Florida Department of Health for letting the Orange Park facility open. A judge earlier this year ruled the health department shouldn't have allowed that, but the courts can't force it to close. The Florida Hospital Association and the Safety Net Hospital Alliance argue the rules should be kept the way they are now. Mark Delagal with the Safety Net Alliance points to the judge's ruling there was no need for Orange Park.
How I view this, which is an amendment that comes in, and I say this respectfully, gives Orange Park a trauma center, whether there's a need or not. I think it's worthy of pointing out that when litigation was commenced about this, there was a determination there was no need in Orange Park, but this, by legislative fiat, says there is a need.
Trauma surgeon Michael Cheatham says level one trauma centers like Orlando Regional Medical Center have the skilled staff and resources to save critically injured people other hospitals don't have. Orlando Regional cared for victims of the Pulse nightclub shooting.
It was a very brief phone call. He said, "I have 20 gunshot wounds coming. I need you." And so I immediately said, "I'm on the way." Before I hung up the phone, I said, "Chad, call everyone," because I knew that we needed as many hands as possible because of the number of victims. Well, it wasn't 20. It was ultimately 44.
Cheatham and others say opening more trauma centers will deplete level one facilities of staff and resources. But Representative Jay Trumbull's bill requires at least two trauma centers for service areas with more than 1.2 million people. That would mean Orange Park can stay open. Trumbull's measure originally called for no cap on the number of trauma centers in the state, which was also supported by Governor Rick Scott. Legacy trauma centers have filed legal challenges over the years whenever the department has proposed reducing or adding trauma centers. Trumbull says he's trying to stop the lawsuits with his bill.
The department has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars over the past few months dealing with these contentious litigation. 35 cases since 2011 have been filed.
While the for-profit Hospital Corporation of America hospital chain supports the bill, the Senate may choose not to bring it for a vote. A companion measure by Senator Travis Hudson died in committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, members of the Florida House moved through a long list of bills during a floor session today. Regan McCarthy reports the meeting teed up several tax cut proposals for a floor vote.
The House tax plan includes reductions for veterans, students, and parents. In fact, Bradenton Republican Representative Jim Boyd, who's pushing the chamber's tax cut package, says there's something in there for just about everyone.
This House tax cut package will mean more money in the pockets of moms, dads, veterans, teachers, students, job creators, and job seekers. Simply put, if you walk, talk, eat, go to school, serve in the military, want to prepare for a hurricane, own a small business, have a child, and more, you're getting a tax cut from the Florida House.
Included in the tax measure is a provision Key Largo Republican Representative Holly Rauschein says will benefit small businesses.
Florida's tax treatment of commercial properties remains one of the most costly in the nation, and we are the only, and let me repeat, only state to charge sales tax on commercial rentals of real property.
Rauschein says a House plan would reduce that tax for 2 years from 6% to 4.5%. The number would move up some to 5.5% starting in 2020. Rauschein says the proposal would mean major savings for businesses and that owners could use that money to reinvest and hire new workers. Another House tax proposal would give parents and caretakers of the elderly a sales tax break on diapers and wipes. Tampa Democratic Representative Janet Cruz says the move is especially important for low-income moms and dads.
One of three low-income American families don't have the diapers they need for their kids. Low-income families pay roughly twice as much for diapers as families that have access to bulk buying options.
The House plan would also provide a tax exemption for feminine hygiene products. Plantation Democratic Representative Katie Edwards presented the provision on the House floor.
As many of you know, this concept has been dubbed in popular media as the tampon tax. From 1977 to 1986, the sales tax on such products were exempt. However, it was reenacted in 1986. What we're doing today is making sure that such products are not subject to state sales tax.
Three sales tax holidays are included in the House tax plan, one for veterans, one for back to school, and one for hurricane preparedness. Other provisions include a sales tax break for textbooks and a carve out for certain agricultural items. Boyd says the House plan totals about $300 million in tax cuts. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FBR Cap Report, and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.